I know you have 30 plus books to your credit, and you start like, okay, who is Steve Eubanks? And if you had a chance to say, okay, this is one book, this represents who I am. I know that would be tough for you because from a golf standpoint, I mean, working with Arnold Palmer on two books, that's pretty special. But I know, deep down in your heart, there's the game being played tomorrow between Army and Navy. And it's more than just a football game. It's what these individuals represent moving forward as well. You had a book that got published back in 2013 called All American. Would that be tough for you? Would you go All American or would you go with one of your Arnold Palmer books?
It's not even close. All American was such a joy and a pleasure to write and really such an honor. Because those young men who played in that Army-Navy game, and I actually took two guys who played in the 2001 game, which is the one that occurred immediately after 9/11, and I followed their military careers for 10 years thereafter. Just to be a part of that, to get to know those guys and to see the heroism and to just experience the honor and traditions and things that go with our military academies. There's nothing like it, Johnny, and I got to tell you, that book is head and shoulders above anything I have ever done or will do.
You know, the game itself, the pageantry special, and I have to be honest with you, and maybe it was because both of these teams, and if you want to include Air Force, same thing, there was a lull there for a while where they weren't that good as far as on the football fields. That has really all changed in recent years, and one of the things that I've also noticed, if you look back over the last 10 years, and this is what I want to see, especially knowing what these individuals are going to be doing after their playing days are over at Army or Navy or Air Force for that matter as well. These teams, for year in and year out, when you take the last 10 years as a whole, we're talking about usually the least penalized teams in the country. And what that means for me, very disciplined individuals.
They're clearly the most disciplined football teams you'll ever see. It is it's one of the more fun games you'll ever see. I mean, I think it's 7 of the last 9 Army-Navy games have been decided by a touchdown or less. Look, it's a competitive game. It's a fun game to attend. But it isn't necessarily about the game. It's about those individuals on the field and what you know they are going to go do after they leave their college days. Not a soul on that football field has aspirations for the NFL. They all went into the academies knowing what their commitment was going to be after school, and they are playing football because they love it. Because once you are accepted to a service academy, your school is taken care of. They aren't there on football scholarships. Everybody who attends is on a scholarship. They're just there serving their country. When you play football at those institutions, you're there for the love of the game.
Army has won 3 out of the last 4. I think this will be Navy's year finally. I don't see the 4-game sweep, but Navy favored by 10.5 in this game. Navy has had an outstanding season this year. Their only 2 losses, they lost to a Memphis team that's playing against Penn State in the Cotton Bowl, and then the only other loss was the defeat at Notre Dame back in mid-November. I don't know if you had a chance to check out the USA Today sports section today, but they did a special section on the Army-Navy game. And one of the things that they did, and you'll appreciate this, they have an actual area there where it says where seniors will report for duty. It says nearly every player who goes to West Point or Annapolis is there for reasons other than finding a path to professional football. So it lists the player's name and what they're going to be doing as far as where they're reporting as far as their assignments after, you know, their 4 years are up.
That's amazing, isn't it? I mean, when you consider that for the last 18 years, the country has been in conflict somewhere around the world. So, when you look at all of the fact that these guys not only know they're going in to serve their country, there's a likelihood that they will see combat.
Right.
It's an extraordinary thing for these young men to be able to go in and do that.
Many of the Army players listed next to their names, infantry. You see Navy pilots mentioned as well. Marine Corps ground troops also. I mean, it's a humbling thing. Now, go back to your book. And what, first of all, inspired you to actually write the book All American, but also let our listeners know what it was about? Because I think it was just, you know, it's such a common sense as far as subject matter. And because if you were trying to sell that in a quick 30-second elevator speech, I'm sure it's like, oh, yeah, this is a no-brainer. How'd you come up with the idea and let our listeners know exactly what it was all about?
Well, I had always wanted to do a story about our heroes, and I just couldn't quite figure out how to do it as a sports writer. You know, that I wasn't going to go overseas and embed with those guys. But watching the Army-Navy game, it dawned on me that the game that occurred in 01 happened in December, just a few short weeks after the attack on 9/11. And in fact, the fires in the World Trade Center were still burning when they played that game in early December. And so the guys who had played on either of those teams had gone to school during peacetime, and they instantly knew that their lives had changed on 9/11 because they knew what they were going to be doing. And so I took the quarterback from the Army team and a linebacker from the Navy team, and I followed their entire careers from the time they chose to go to the various academies and why they chose to go there through the next 10 years up until the 2011 Army-Navy game. We had one of them served in the Marine Corps. The other got out of the Army as a captain. They both were in Iraq. They were awarded numerous medals, including the Silver Star for bravery. It's an extraordinary story of heroism.
How'd you come up with the two subjects?
You know, it's interesting because I had the idea before I had the guys, and the sports information director at Navy was an old friend of mine, and I just called him and I said, "Scott, here's the idea. Do you have anybody that you have in mind?" And he said, "Got the perfect candidate for you." It was a fellow named Brian Stan, who, again, played in 01. He was a linebacker on that team, Marine, awarded the Silver Star for bravery in Iraq, and got out and was a UFC fighter after that. So, and actually lived close by. So once I got Brian on board, it's kind of funny because Brian's story is remarkable. And once I got him, I contacted some folks at Army and at West Point and said, "Hey guys, Navy really came through for me. What have you got?" And by the time the emails quit flying around, I had the Secretary of the Army involved. He said, "We really need to help this man out." So they came up with Chad Jenkins, who was the quarterback on that 2001 Army team. Again, served in Iraq as an Army captain in the infantry and went on to be an FBI agent after that.
You know, it's interesting. I have so many, whether we're talking about family members, friends, acquaintances, whatever, but people that hear you and our chats, they feel like they know you already. And I get asked often, "Is he always that nice?" And honestly, in the years that I've known you, I've never experienced you having a bad day. What's a bad day like for Steve Eubanks?
Oh, I don't know. You know, the coffee gets cold like everybody else's, but, you know, it's... I kind of feel like, Johnny, you wake up with a choice. You know, every day that the sun comes up, you can either approach it as being happy or being unhappy. And I just choose to be happy.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up from a sports standpoint. I mean, obviously, if you're an Alabama fan, this season did not end the way, this decade did not end the way you wanted. But if you start looking back over the last 9 years, and if I told you seven of those seasons, you were going to have a chance to play for the national championship, the only ones that you did not, 2013 kick six, and this year. That's it. And you should be happy. And the fact, by the way, I thought there was one record I thought would never be touched in college football, and Alabama has a chance to tie that this year if they beat Michigan in their bowl game. And it was a record set by Penn back when they played a lot more games in the 1890s. Remember the Swanee team that had like six games in 7 days, something along those lines? Well,
sure.
Back then, college football played a lot of games. Well, Penn had 124 victories in the 1890s. Alabama right now, with one game to go this decade from, you know, the 2010s, they have 123. Now, think about that. They've averaged 12.3 wins per season over 10 years. They got a chance to match that record against, you know, that Penn set back in the 1890s if they can find a way to get Jim Harbaugh to stop talking and beat Michigan coming up.
Well, I have to tell you, I have to put the odds pretty much in their favor to do that. But it's an extraordinary dynasty. I mean, I was fortunate enough to be over there to see a lot of those games and to get to know a lot of those players and to just be a part of that whole thing. But unfortunately, like a lot of history, you don't realize it when you're in it.
Right.
You know you're seeing something special, but you can't fully appreciate it until you have some distance and some hindsight. And I just hope that the people who have been there, who have seen it, who have been witness to all of the stuff that has taken place, don't need that that length of time to realize this is something really, really special that we were a part of.
I mean, I go back in my lifetime, even as a kid, I would have loved to have seen Joe Namath play one more game. I would have loved to have seen Hank Aaron in his prime play one more game. Dan Marino, I'm not a fan of the Dolphins, wasn't really necessarily a big fan of Dan Marino, but I appreciated his talents. It was for me, when I'd be flipping around and Miami was on, Marino's on there, it's almost like one of those movies like Rocky or any of those guy movies that if you watch more than 20 seconds, you're going to be watching for the next hour and a half because you're just hooked back in. Well, the same thing with those kind of guys like a Dan Marino or a Brett Favre, for example, as well.
Sure. My father ended up taking me to see Hank Aaron and Willie Mays play in the same game. So that was back in the 70s. I was a young kid. I mean, I vaguely remember doing it. But the fact that he did it really meant something to me, and even to this day it does. And I did the same for my kids in that I took them to see Michael Jordan play both baseball and basketball because I wanted them to grow up saying, yeah, I saw him do both.
Yeah, I saw Willie Mays in person, Willie McCovey in person. I saw Hank Aaron in an exhibition game in Birmingham. Basically, by the way, it was on the eve of 74. And even as a kid, you know, here I was 10 years of age, I didn't think Hank Aaron was going to survive the offseason because, remember, he ended up one home run short of tying Babe Ruth between 73 and 74. I didn't think he was going to survive. I thought some nut would assassinate him because, you know, it was just fresh off of all those assassinations in the late 60s. And then if you want to go back to 63 with JFK as well, and because of what the tensions were like, I just never could understand why, just because he's African-American, he's going to beat Babe Ruth's record, why should that matter to you? I just never could understand that way of thinking.
Yeah, me either. But you know, I do remember it growing up in the South. I've had those same feelings. You got to wondering, is he really going to make it? All of the death threats that we're getting, it seemed to be an everyday occurrence. And, you know, if you lived through that period in the late 60s with all those assassinations, it was a very real fear.
Well, I think people forget, too, during that same time frame, I think we had, 1,000 bombings over a 3-year period? I mean, we were averaging, 3 to 6 bombings every other day, it seemed like, in the early 70s, here in the U.S.
Oh, yeah.
Not over in London, not somewhere in Germany, right here in the U.S.
Right. And you know, the news was scary at that point. And there wasn't the 24-hour coverage, but when you would turn it on during that 30 minutes, it left you frightened.
And you trusted Walter Cronkite.
Absolutely.
Having a chance once again to visit with Steve Eubanks. Army-Navy, you know, one of the things, especially now that they're also playing really good football, and in usually years we're talking about all three teams are bowl eligible. This year, just Navy and Air Force. But every Saturday during my Countdown to Kickoff tailgate show, which is dedicated entirely to college football, I make sure I have an Armed Forces update every week just because I know what it – you know, what these individuals, what they represent, not just on any given Saturday as far as during the football season, but knowing what's in store for them as we move forward and they move forward in their lives.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you should mention that because for the 10 years from the 01 game through the 2011 game, the 2001 Army team was the last team Army team to win. They went a long, long time where Navy dominated the series. Thankfully, Army has won, I think they've won the last three. Very close contests, but last year, of course, Army had a tremendous season. They were bowl eligible and really surprised a lot of people. But when they lost to Michigan this year and the way they lost to Michigan, I think that turned their season. I think that there was a deflation that went into the team after that point, and it kind of flipped things on them. And now they've won the last three in a row, but there was a tough stretch throughout the month of October. But you're right. I mean, look, the records are almost secondary when you watch this contest. And I would say that even though Navy is favored by more than 10, this is going to be a close game. It always is. There's just an elevation that goes with this on both sides.
Well, here's the thing. Army's 5-7, right? 6 of their 7 losses, came to the hands of teams that are bowl eligible this year. And you
right.
mentioned Michigan. I mean, go back to the fact that last year, Oklahoma, which was, by the way, one of the four playoff teams last year, Oklahoma had to take Army to overtime before they won. It wasn't the other way around. And then we go back to Army. I really thought that I bet they wish they could have that third quarter all over again, because they were up by 10 in that game, and they end up losing in double overtime at Michigan back in week 2 this year. But even at 5-7, six tough losses, close losses too, in many of these losses for Army. They're a much better team than their record of 5-7.
Absolutely, they are. They are a much better team, and I think that when they show up on Saturday, you're going to see that you're not going to believe that you're looking at a 5-7 team. I think you're going to say, "Wow, how did this team not win 9 games?"
All right, before we let you go, President's Cup already starting play today. The international squad had the 6.5 to 3.5 point lead, so the 3-point lead. Not a good day so far either. When you look at the four matchups, the U.S. leading in only one of the four. I'm just going to be honest with you. I'm not really surprised. Are you?
No, not at all. And I said before they went over there, for one thing, you had almost the entire U.S. President's Cup squad played in the Bahamas last week. Well, I don't know if you've got a globe handy, but when you look at the Bahamas and Melbourne, Australia, it's the exact other side of the world. You can't get on a plane on a Sunday night, fly that far, and expect to play good golf starting on Thursday. And it isn't the long game. It's what I tell everyone. I mean, you can still hit a 6-iron when you're jet lagged. It's that 10-footer. You know, that's when things get a little wobbly, because your body is still just trying to adjust, and all of the touch and feel that you would have normally had just kind of evaporates. But once you get your sea legs about you, the internationals have got that one thing now that they have been lacking in past President's Cups. They have belief. They went out there and took it to the Americans, and they believe they can win now. And it's just a razor-thin margin when you get to this level, and a lot of times that makes the difference.
The biggest blowout right now through 12, Patrick Reed and Simpson, they're down by 3. Patrick Reed, you know, it just seems like what every hole he's getting, it's like a football game. A lot of heckling going on. How deserving is it?
Very deserving. I mean, look, one of the problems that Tiger had is, who do you put with him? I mean, he basically has no friends. He's he alienates the crowds everywhere he goes. And, you know, so the person that you're stuck with him is having to put up with all of that. And so it's different in singles play when it's just you and your opponent. But when you're out there with a partner, I mean, you're kind of throwing your partner under the bus when you're egging the crowd on the way he tends to do.
And for those that don't know, okay, why would they be heckling? Won't you in your the shortest version possible, explain why?
Well, Patrick has never been the most affable character with the fans, but last week in the Bahamas, he put a club down behind a ball in a waste bunker, and as he took it back on a practice swing, he sort of shoveled some sand away, dramatically improving his lie. And when he did, he came in claiming he didn't know he had done it. But
how do you not know that? I am a duffer, and I know these things.
Sure. When you hit that much sand on your takeaway, you know that you've done it.